You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 57. This minute opens with Yannick saying, "Alright, boys," and ends with Holloway being a romantic and presenting Shaw with, "The rose I had frozen with the champagne. I was going to give it to you when we found what we came for."
"Alright, boys.
Sleep tight. Try not to bugger each other."
See, even Yannick can see the chemistry here. He ships it. He ships Fightfield and Milburn. Yannick seems primarily amused by this entire scenario. He's probably been on other missions like this and has no reason to think they are in any danger. He seems a little curious about this situation with the probe, but I don't read concern on his face at all. Just sort of a, "Huh, that's odd." It only just occurred to me that Fifold is never seen wearing the golden cap the rest of the crew wears. He refuses to cover his mohawk and tattoos. He puts a lot of effort into it, so, you know, I understand. So, the boys decide to go the complete opposite direction from the mysterious ping, and we shall catch up with them in later minutes. We then cut to Shaw, sitting on the couch in her apartment, eating dinner, watching the recordings from the day's mission. It doesn't seem like a good idea to try to record audio while eating, but each to their own. The couch is the same golden vinyl fabric we've seen used a lot in the ship and in the other vehicles. Clearly, Wayland was going for an aesthetic, and he wanted to adhere to it as much as possible. This scene is in direct contrast to Holloway's last scene. While Holloway is facing an existential crisis, Shaw, on the other hand, seems perfectly content with all they have found so far. He makes fun of her faith, but from what we see here, he feels lost and confused because he has no internal grounding, whether that be spiritual or otherwise. I would argue that everyone needs a spiritual or philosophical center. It doesn't necessarily mean religious or acknowledging a higher power, but to just have a set of guiding principles and ideologies so you don't fall apart at the first sign of a challenge to your worldview. I think Charlie is spiritually lacking. He wants something to come along to tell him how the universe works, and that's simply not realistic. Unless you're an android, and even then, it is a disappointment when your creator explains it all. I think Charlie seeks what he lacks from Shaw, especially in this moment, and I'll delve further into relationship in future minutes. I'm honestly starting to become more invested and fascinated by their relationship now that I'm examining it so closely. But I'm also getting to a point in this series where I wonder, does it mean a movie has failed if you don't pick up on these things without having to scrutinize it so closely? Or is a story supposed to be like a puzzle, and you're supposed to notice new details and how they fit together upon repeat viewing? I guess it depends on what details we're talking about. If you miss the major points of a plot, that's a bad thing. But the details I am noticing are more to do with characters and their relationships to each other. From my perspective, this is just enriching my experience, but it wasn't absolutely vital to be able to understand the story. Like my whole defense of Holloway and Milburn and Fifield, it's not important that you empathize with them or see from their perspective, but if you want to do that, you get a whole new experience. Costume notes, my favorite segment. We get a bit of an oriental vibe with Shaw's outfit here. She's also eating with chopsticks. Again, all artifacts to silently convey that this is a globe-trotting woman who may have spent considerable time amongst cultures outside of her own. In early costume tests, they tried putting her in more Chinese-inspired outfits. It was fun watching those test fittings, and you can find those in the special features of the Blu-ray. And it was fun watching those test fittings because we generally only get to see a character fully formed in the final movie. To me, the clothes play a big part of a character. So seeing Shaw in other outfits that she would never wear shows me all the kinds of women she could have been. But in the end, I think they nailed it. She's practical and modest, but the outfits are attractive and timeless. Cute, but not sexualized. I think they did a similar thing with Vickers. Her wardrobe is sexy, but not sexualized. Sexy, but scary, if you will. Even in that skin-tight unitard, her clothes tell us, look, but don't touch. Looking closely at the living quarters, we see there are a few things in the kitchen, mostly just the necessities to make tea or coffee. It's nice to see these items haven't really changed much in nearly a century. Although, as the nutrition nerd, I have to wonder what's in those containers. Do they still eat real sugar in the future, or is it all sweeteners? Is there real caffeine, or is it some other substance that they've created in a lab? Charlie enters the room. He has taken off his thongs and jacket, and we now see him wearing a white Henley shirt underneath. I don't know what it is about these shirts that costume designers want to put adventurer characters in them. Nathan Drake of the previously mentioned Uncharted games, God, I mentioned that a lot, is never seen in anything else, and I definitely went through a phase of dressing like that, but now I'm all about the android aesthetic, so I guess I dress more like David these days. I'm all about tech wear and active wear and stuff like that. I love the shot where the rose passes through the holographic projection. Not much to say, it's just a great shot. It's also good that we see a light flashing outside the window representing the storm. For one, it's just a nice touch, but also because in reality, it's probably just a very simple setup. A light swinging around in a dark corner of the set. It could literally have just been someone moving a light around manually. Even on a big movie like this, the simplest method is often the best method. Shaw dictates into a recording device.
Based on the behavior of the subject in these holographic recordings, we're still attempting to identify what caused the head to combust. I can't help but wonder, was there an outbreak here?
So she's not far off. She's very astute. Speaking of outbreaks, Ridley Scott seems to have a fascination with viral contagions like this. As he revealed in an interview that he was once slated to direct an adaptation of the non-fiction book The Hot Zone by Richard Preston about the Ebola virus. This film ended up becoming Outbreak, directed by Wolfgang Peterson, starring the not very nice to women Dustin Hoffman and the also not very nice to women Morgan Freeman. Thankfully, we don't need to watch that because just this year, Ridley was executive producer on a Hot Zone miniseries. The story is seriously fascinating and frightening. Ridley has also compared LV-223 to the Anthrax Island, aka Grenard Island off the coast of Scotland. This was an island where experiments on anthrax were carried out and the entire island was declared unsuitable for life until the 1980s. Fun fact, on the 1st of May 1990, the island was repurchased by the heirs of the original owner for the original sale price of £500. On the one hand, bargain, in complete island, £500, quite good. On the other hand, didn't they technically already own the island?
You rang, ma'am?
Apparently Charlie was going to stay at that pool table all night if Shaw hadn't called him in. I love her reaction though. I have something important to tell you. What is that? Sort of this incredulous reaction to the rose, but then she clearly appreciates the gesture. There's a real chemistry here, and we will see that a lot in this scene. I'm glad they didn't go with the deleted scene, which you can watch, and I'll talk about this more in the next minute, where the scene gets really hostile. They actually have an argument, and then they make out. Yeah, I'm glad they didn't do that one. It's been a while, but it's time to read the script. This time, Paradise by Damon Lindelof, pages 54 to 57 for those reading along at home. Interior, Magellan, Shaw's quarters, night. A ghost engineer running through the labyrinthine passages of the pyramid. Oh, see? There we go. Labyrinth. Theory confirmed. And we are chasing it. Widen to find Shaw sitting at her computer watching a replay of her helmet cam from the expedition earlier. That reminds me a bit of Alien Covenant where they actually plug the helmet in and they're watching the helmet cam footage. Tennessee's helmet footage. Fear. Terror. Something that knows it is about to die. It's downright freaky. Holloway, off-screen. Boo. Shaw jumps out of her seat, startled by the voice behind her. Shaw. Jesus! Shaw turns to see Holloway. She didn't hear him come in. He grins as he plunks down on her bed. Holloway. For such a nice Catholic girl, you sure take the Lord's name in vain a lot. She takes it in, shakes her head. You're all drunk. I am indeed. What's the matter with your eye? And now we see it. Holloway's right eye is extremely bloodshot. He blinks, rubs it. Something's in it, I guess. He nods to the image of the engineer on the computer. Looks pretty scared for a ghost. It's not a ghost, it's a recording. Some kind of video log. We must have triggered it when we came in. Uh-huh. So why isn't there a recording of whatever was chasing him? Nothing was chasing him. I think he was trying to find a way to kill himself. There was an outbreak here. Jesus, a beat. Holloway reacts. And what's that based on? I've seen it before. Something painful from her past, but Holloway completely dismisses it. This isn't Africa, Ellie. It's goddamn outer space. Unsure, low blow, she points to the engineer, pissed. I just watched this thing's head explode, so I think I know infection when I see it. I'm telling you, there was something inside it, something on a cellular level, maybe even genetic. Doesn't matter. Finding out what killed a bunch of goddamn aliens 2,000 years ago changes nothing. Shaw narrows her eyes, indulges him long enough. What is it you want to change exactly? Holloway may be drunk, but he's passionate. 90% of the people on our planet believe some magical man in the sky put them there. And if they just do exactly what he wants them to do, they all get to go someplace wonderful and live forever. What do I want to change? I want to change their minds. Shaw absorbs that. I knew he felt that way, but it's another thing to hear it, especially when she's one of those people. And Holloway ain't done, points to the screen. These things made us. We were just an experiment, and Earth was their damned petri dish, and we're never gonna prove it with mummies. She just looks at him, digesting that. Then, softly, and even if we proved they made us, who made them? Ah, her logic is sound, and he hates that it's sound. They're not gods, Shaw. They're the closest thing we've got. Oh, so you came light years to ask for what? Forgiveness for your sins, the meaning of life, or some explanation of why your daddy died and left you all crack? Shaw punches him in the face. Holloway staggers back, stumbles back onto the bed. Damn, that was a pretty good shot. Holloway brings his hand to his lip, bleeding. Shaw just stands there, breathing heavy. He looks up at her now, suddenly sympathetic. Ow? Don't talk about my father. A beat, then Holloway nods. Yeah, I got it. She shakes her head, goes over to her sink, wets a washcloth, brings it over to him, dabs his lip. A sudden tenderness now. Forgive me? Shaw considers it then. Can you shut up? They look at each other now, and we see it unadulterated for the first time. Real, genuine love. He flashes that grin. I'll try. And seeing his opening, Holloway leans forward and kisses her. It's tender at first, gentle. But all of that residual anger has to go somewhere, and soon it becomes passionate, borderline violent, as they pull each other's clothes off. Goddamn, it is hot. And just before it gets too hot, we cut to another scene. Yannick playing O Come All Ye Faithful, just so you know. Wowee. Lindelof, you dirty boy. I feel dirty for reading that. This scene was actually used as the audition scene for sure. There are clips in the special features where Noomi Rapace, still unsure of the pronunciation, someone please correct me, Noomi Rapace doing this scene, actually with the guy who plays Milburn, Rafe Spall, because I don't think they'd cast Charlie yet, or maybe they were considering Rafe as Charlie, but then there's another audition scene where he's playing David, which is quite funny, plays it very Ash-like, but I'm tangenting a bit from my point. My point was that this scene, at least in the early phases, was considered, oh, this is a very critical moment for her, and this really defines Shaw's character or the relationship between Shaw and Holloway. And no, it really does, and I'm glad they didn't go that direction, because I don't like the idea that they're so physically violent with each other and there's this real aggression there. And especially when you're dealing with a fairly big ensemble movie, you don't have time to have those nuances of they really love each other, but then they bicker sometimes. And no, I'm glad that it was played fairly straightforward. That, yep, Shaw and Holloway love each other. It's a fairly functional relationship. The end. And I'm very happy with what we got. And we'll go into more depth about those deleted scenes and the test scenes and the script and all of that. There's a lot of alternate views of this particular scene, which is quite interesting. I guess, as I said, because it's such a character moment. It's supposed to establish a lot about character and relationship. All right, that about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook.